In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Today we have a crazy story of revenge against a high school classmate. We'll get into that in a bit, but first, how I filled my ex's toilet bowl with rocks. I met my ex-girlfriend when she was a broke, overly ambitious, and delusional opportunist. We both worked as domestic staff in the house of a wealthy businessman and politician then. I worked as the pool boy and gardener, while she cleaned the house alongside an older lady. The job may have been considered a lowly one at the time. My friends thought I was being ridiculous working the same job they did during summer in high school, but I kept the job because the pay was good, even better than many other white-collar jobs my friends had. Our employer is a wealthy man and he pays his employees well. My ex-girlfriend was hot. It was a lot harder to notice just how attractive she was, seeing as she had to put on a uniform at work, but anyone who took a cursory look at her would notice just how attractive she was. At the time, I was in my final year in college and looked forward to graduating and getting a job that paid more. Still, my job paid for my car maintenance, the clothes I had on my back, my food, and all the other bills I had to take care of. My aunt paid my tuition, so I didn't have to take student loans or anything, and I looked forward to starting on a clean slate after college with zero debt hanging over my head. My aunt had advised me to wait until I was done with college and was well on my way to achieving my dreams before deciding to get into a relationship. Girls can be a huge distraction, she would say. When you're well on your way to making something out of your life, girls will come in their numbers. I took her advice, but I soon forgot all about them when I met my ex. We became friends for some weird reason. The weird reason being that she presented herself as some helpless lady who needed help. I wanted to help and save her from whatever she was running away from. At the time, she told me all about her lofty dreams. Her dreams of being a writer, a singer, an actress. She said she wanted to be a model and was almost signed to an agency, but she had to leave because the agency owner wanted to get her to date him. She also wanted to be a writer and had submitted manuscripts to publishing houses, but they rejected her because of her name. She wanted to be a singer, but was still working hard on that. Her acting career was on hold because she had an accent. She had different reasons for why she could have been great, but wasn't. Still, I didn't see that as a red flag. She was a young immigrant lady who was trying to find her way and be successful in a new country, and I felt pity for her. I wanted her to realize her dreams, so I would regularly ask about what she was doing to reach these goals. Even when I noticed that whenever our boss and his family were around, she wore another uniform, a tighter dress that clung desperately to her chest and was way above her knees. The older lady she cleaned with once said that she did that to make herself attractive to our boss while they were having an argument, and I burst out laughing. A while after the argument, she'd asked me why I laughed, and whether I thought our boss could never be attracted to someone. I didn't pay attention to how hurt she was at the idea of our boss not being interested in her. I just told her that she was no doubt a beautiful woman and that any man would find her attractive. I also did not pay attention to the fact that it wasn't until I told her that I was in college and that I had plans to work in a bank after college and work my way up the corporate ladder later that she started paying me special attention. Like I said, we were friends, so we certainly had friendship going on for us, but we never went beyond that before then. I liked her, and it must have shown in the things that I said and the comments that I made while talking to her, but she never reciprocated. She never flirted back all the times I would flirt with her. My flirtatious comments were always met with a stern look, so I just stopped. When I told her about my plans, however, things changed. She would flirt subtly with me, and like a puppy, I would fall for it and be all over her. That continued until she suddenly started seeing a mystery man. She would tell us, the other staff and me, all about him, and her appearance improved a bit. It was evident that she was seeing someone, but none of us knew who it was, because she never introduced him to us or even showed us a picture of him. I finally found out that the mystery man was our boss's personal assistant. He was married, and that was why their affair was kept secret. He made many promises to her, promised to introduce her to certain people who could help her go further in her career, and even promised to give her a huge amount of money. He fulfilled none of these promises and suddenly ghosted her. When she confronted him and threatened to contact his wife, he swore that he'd get her fired. And that shut her up. My ex told me this story herself. And I know I should have figured out by then that she was just some girl desperate enough to exchange favors for money, but I was in love with her. I pitied and felt bad for her. I was even mad that the personal assistant guy took advantage of how naive she was. Shortly after that incident, she went back to flirting with me and being all sweet on me. I finally asked her out. She said she'd never been on the inside of a university, so I offered to give her a campus tour on a Sunday. She wore a nice flowery dress. It was a simple dress, but it suited her well and made her look very pretty. She also let her hair down, and that gave her face a feminine fullness. On that date, we had our first kiss, and then I asked her to be my girlfriend. A few months later, I graduated from college and quit my job at the house. I also got an internship opportunity at a finance firm. It was a good one. The pay was sweet, and as a graduation gift, my aunt offered to pay my rent for 6 months. At the time, my girlfriend had started to complain about living with her extended family. It was a small house, and her uncle had many kids and kids of other family members living with him. She had to share her room with 3 others and was very uncomfortable. I asked her to move in with me, and she happily did. It wasn't until my girlfriend moved in with me that I understood why she wasn't anywhere near being as successful as she wanted. She was lazy. My ex never got up early unless she had to be at work. And the only reason she worked was because she had to. She hardly ever cleaned the house and never offered to cook. I preferred to cook because it was cheaper and healthier. She always wanted us to eat out because that way she could get out of helping out in the kitchen. Her behavior irritated me, but whenever I pointed it out to her, she would flare up and make me feel guilty about bringing it up. She would then threaten to move out and I'd apologize. That went on for a while until one day, I returned home from work and saw that my ex had moved out.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Storytime is sponsored by BetterHelp. Nearly everyone at some point in their life will struggle with their mental health, whether that's something stressful at work, in a personal relationship, or something else. I know that I really struggled with anxiety in my early 20s, and therapy was a massive help for me. That's why I'm a massive fan of therapy, and today's sponsor, BetterHelp. If there is anything in your life, big or small, that is negatively affecting you, get it off your chest with BetterHelp. It's an online therapy service that, after finishing a small questionnaire, will match you with a licensed therapist, where you can book appointments that match up with your schedule at any place or any time. And if you feel like you're not bonding with your therapist, you can switch at any point for free. Also, therapy isn't just if you're struggling with mental health. If you're looking for guidance or ways to improve your social skills, life, or relationships, it's a great judgment-free way of doing that. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/StorytimePod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/StorytimePod.
I was alarmed. I went to her uncle's house to see if she was there, but she wasn't. I went to the house where we used to work and was told she'd quit her job the week before. Soon after, I found out that she'd just rented her own place. It was a comfortable apartment in the heart of the city. There was no way she could afford to pay for it. When I finally saw her, she admitted that she'd been seeing the personal assistant she'd had an affair with. He'd gotten her an apartment, as promised, and she was leaving me. At that point, I was not shocked. It was clear that I'd been playing and she'd been only using me. I just accepted what was before me and let her be. For 5 months, I didn't hear from my ex. She didn't reach out to me, and I didn't reach out to her either. 6 months later, she called me. Her sultry voice was even extra sultry. She asked how I was doing and if I wanted to meet up to talk. I deliberately pretended to be interested. I knew she needed something, but I was curious to know what it was that she needed. She asked me to come over to her house probably to lower my defense, and I obliged her. I went to the apartment one evening, and she told me the tales of how the personal assistant ditched her. He refused to send her the money for the next month's rent, and warned her to never contact him again. As usual, she was teary-eyed and all that. I knew what she was getting at. She wanted to ask me to move in with her. I pretended to feel sorry for her and went along with it. I wasn't seeing anyone at the time, and I was bored, so I just went along with the whole thing. That week, we hung out every day, mostly in her apartment, and did all the couple stuff together. She was convinced I had forgiven her, but I was waiting till she was homeless. She said they refused to take her back at her old job and that she was going to keep chasing an acting career. She even made promises about doing things for me when she made enough money from acting. She was going to move out of the apartment and the landlords were going to give her a refund of the caution fee. The residents of the apartment she stayed in had to pay a caution fee when they started renting. The caution fee was a huge amount, but it could only be returned if, after the course of the resident's stay, the management didn't have to fix anything. She said her apartment would be inspected, and then she'd be handed her caution fee at the end of the month. She looked forward to getting that money from them and moving into mine. She even had a list of all the stuff she was going to buy with the money. You know what's very funny? She never even apologized properly. She just blamed everything on the personal assistant guy like she had no will of her own and was under his control. One evening, the management was to come for the inspection the next day. I was in her apartment when she went out to job hunt. Someone had told her she'd get a job at a bar, and the bar manager was only ever around in the evening. Soon after she left, I left the apartment, went to a park that was close by, picked all the rocks I saw and could carry, filled a sack with them, and went back to her house. I then emptied the sack into her toilet bowl. I filled the whole thing up. There were two bathrooms in her house, so I went back to the park with the sack and filled the toilet bowl in the other bathroom too. After doing that, I shut her door and left quickly. Filling the toilet with rocks will make sure that she never gets her caution fee back. The man she left me for left her with nothing. I suspect that the reason he got her an apartment was because he needed a secret place to visit her. After the inspection, she wasn't given the caution fee. She called me crying her eyes out and accusing me of taking advantage of her. She even asked to meet up, but I refused. I was already onto her manipulative tactics. Well, I guess if you're leaving the situation where you've been yanked around back and forth, I guess you would want to leave them with something to remember you by. It's kind of crazy and actually kind of sad that after all that, they would call up OP accusing them and then also saying, "Can we meet up?" It's just so messy. Also, hi, I'm Steven, and if you guys enjoy crazy stories of revenge, why not hit those like and subscribe buttons down below? That said, our next story is how I paid my stepmother back for what she did to my family. There is nothing more painful than the thought, or rather in this case, the feeling of having to lose someone you hold dearly to your heart, so much so that you could have never have imagined life without that person, and that's not all. Only for you to realize that it was not a natural occurrence or a coincidence, but rather it was the work and or action of someone else you hold so dearly to your heart too. And all of this was just as a result of the struggle to get proper recognition in the eyes of someone superior for something really beneficial for both sides. This is the story of how I got back at my stepmother for the terrible act she committed against my beloved sister over the struggle for who was going to hold the largest and most shares in inheritance left behind by our father. My sister, female 19, and I, male 25, were the only children of my father and also of our biological mother. This was right before she passed. Unfortunately, she was the love of my father's life, and their love was as strong as anything I'd ever seen. This was, however, cut short by the terminal illness that claimed her life earlier than anyone had thought or anticipated. My father was really broken by this, and I was the only one that realized this at the time, as my little sister was too young at the time to have noticed or even grasped what was truly going on. It took my father quite some time before he was finally able to move past the loss, and he did so as quickly as he could. as he knew at the time that there was nothing he could have done to prevent that, and the only thing that was within his capabilities was taking care of his children. That was my sister and myself. And after I truly had understood what my father was going through and the hurdles he was going to be facing, I decided to lend a hand in the process. I did so by taking care of my sister and myself also, without having to bother my father with everything. This was excluding the necessities, of course, as at the time, there was no reason for me to work or do anything of the sorts, as my father was quite wealthy at the time. His business was moving very smoothly and everything seemed to be going really well for us, and money was definitely no problem of ours. Most times, my father was usually always away on his business meetings, and these were the moments where I usually stepped up, assuming the role and taking care of my sister and myself. There was this particular day when he was away on a business trip, and the only difference between his previous meetings and this one was the fact that the time he had spent away was considerably longer than the previous business meetings. Unusually long, in fact. And when he finally came back, he didn't stay for long yet again, as this time he was off for another supposed business meeting. I could vaguely deduce at the time that these were no ordinary business meetings that he was going for, but I just couldn't place my hands on it. And I didn't have to ponder for long, as before long, I'd soon figured out what exactly was always taking his time during his meetings, and why the meetings were happening more often than it, or rather they, should. One fateful day, when he came back from his usual meetings, he didn't come alone, and this was the first time I crossed paths with my soon-to-be stepmother. She was quite literally half my father's age, but then she didn't look her age, not even in the slightest. And this was actually one of the things that I liked about her at the time. After our first meeting, slowly but steadily, she was already integrating herself into our house and our family. And sooner rather than later, my father soon formally introduced her to myself and my sister as the newest addition to the family, his new wife and our new stepmother. I had no idea at the time what was going on or what intentions she had in mind for my father, but then, at that very moment, I knew that my father had truly began to feel happy for the first time in a long time, and for this, I didn't, or rather, I chose not to think of anything else, except for what matters. Little did I know that I had quite the surprise waiting in store for both myself and my family. Luckily and thankfully, I was able to put a lid on her act before things went wholly out of control. Right after my father had gotten married to her, things were relatively alright between the both of them. I mean, don't get me wrong. They usually had their moment where the both of them would be engaged in some serious arguments, sometimes over the most little of things. But then again, couples fight and they make up. And this was one of the things that I know for a fact was not a problem between my father and my stepmother. There were, however, some cases where I would wonder whether or not she was going to leave my father, as the arguments would get so heated that I would even become so scared and all. But thankfully, that wasn't the case at the time. About a whole year into their marriage, my father's health was greatly deteriorating at an unprecedented rate. The doctors couldn't diagnose what exactly the problem was, and they just attributed it to his old age. Not like he was all that old at the time anyways, and they were placing him under strict observations. Because of this at that time, he was staying full-time in the hospital, and my sister and I were placed in the custody of my stepmother for the time being. And at the time, we had thought that this would be for the best, at least just until my father was able to recover his health, to a reasonable extent. And of course, obviously, my sister and I at the time were relatively happy to have someone there for us. How wrong we were. Almost as if she were just finally revealing her true self, her attitude and behavior towards my sister and myself had taken a complete 360, as there was no trace of her former self when she was always around my father. I couldn't understand what prompted this change at the time, but looking back now, I think I completely understand why that was the case with her. The thing was, she wasn't really into my father for anything other than the money she was receiving and the manner in which he sponsored and catered for her rich lifestyle. Things were really not looking good for my sister.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, A better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
And myself, I knew I had to do something, but at the time, it didn't seem like there was much I could have done to change the entire situation. My father was still in the hospital for quite some time, and it was just on rare occasions that he would be conscious enough to see my sister and I, and even when he did, it was never for long, as we were always escorted out on the premise that my father needed his rest, and that visiting him wasn't allowed anymore. At some point, I usually found this quite upsetting, as we usually went during the daytime, and I couldn't find the problem with my sister and I visiting him during the day. But then again, there was no way I could have changed the entire situation, as back at home, things were even worse than we had expected. Normally, we usually had our meals complete for the day, as there was never any lack of provisions for that, at the very least. My father made sure of this. But then, while our stepmother was having the total change, or rather, reversion in her mood, character, and personality, a lot of things had changed, and this was one of them. She placed restrictions on the amount of food we ate, the times we ate, and basically on every other thing or activity that we were going to get ourselves engaged in. It got so bad that she had to resort to even dropping us out from the school my father had put us in, on the premise that there wasn't enough funds to properly manage the funds my father left behind for her. Even when I knew fully well that my father had more than enough resources kept away for the safe use of the entire household. And I guess she didn't know this single, yet vital and crucial piece of information. So when she did this, I immediately went to where my father had kept his stash and took out what I felt would be sufficient enough to sustain my sister and myself in all of this. And just like that, I was still able to pay the fees she said, apparently, was too much. And this in some way was upsetting for her. And later along the line, she soon found out that there was something I was hiding, as she soon found out that I was the one that made the deposit for myself and my sister. It was at this time that she knew that there was definitely something I was hiding, and she wanted to, by all means, figure out what it was. She came to me on several occasions, trying to take the calm approach and converse with me in the hopes that I might let up. Little did she know that I wasn't willing, not even in the slightest. And after weeks of non-stop trying to get me to talk, she finally gave up the act and almost resorted to violent means. She attempted starving my sister and myself for days, but this had no effect as we had something to fall back on. And after she realized that this was getting her nowhere, she eventually turned to physical violence, as it was my very own sister that was the main target of her actions. It all happened when I was out one day, and I left my sister at home. I was looking to get something for the both of us for dinner, and seeing as she had made the kitchen off limits, I had no choice but to step out myself. After I got back, I found out that my sister was not in good shape at all. She had a swollen eye and a black eye, and at the same time, she had various bruises on her body, and she was crying her eyes out when I got there. I was so furious, I didn't even know what to do or how to react. I just knew that she had to pay for what she had done to my sister then, before ultimately deciding that she had to pay in general for the terrible treatments we had been getting. But before I could confront her, I had immediately called the police and reported the case to them. They approximated their time of arrival as 30 minutes, and I felt this was enough time to say my goodbyes literally. I didn't hold back on my words and told her how I felt truly and basically putting in some elements of provocations all to make her resort to her usual violent self, and she did. But just as she was doing so, the officers had gotten in and apprehended her on the spot. I guess that was more than enough evidence that they needed, as they took her away. Although I was badly hurt, with bruises and blood dripping from my mouth, I gave her the middle finger just as a final parting gift to her, because we both knew at the time that there was no escaping her fate. She had gotten what she had coming for a very long time. So, although the story did take a very dark turn, initially, I thought this was going to go to a place of like, they found out she was poisoning the father to try to take the inheritance for herself or something. I mean, you hate to see OP have to sacrifice actual injury to get the police to arrest them, but it was a pretty smart move. Our next story is my revenge on my running partner in high school. My name is Lillian, but in high school, everyone seemed to prefer calling me Lily for some reason. Of all the things that happened to me in high school, one of the things I could never forget, not even in a million years, is that period when I decided to contest for student body president. It was my senior year of high school, and you can say it was the most eye-opening experience in my teenage years. The main issue I had was that I was a cliche student in high school movies. I saw myself as a go-getter, I wanted to get things done, and I wasn't afraid to go after the things I saw myself doing. With each step, I carried the weight of my aspirations on my shoulders, not willing to be deterred from making a mark, a difference of some sort, within the school community. I guess this thought came to mind from freshman year when I stumbled on the record of how we got to have the school magazine. It wasn't always there. One student body president pushed the idea and saw it come to pass before they graduated. This was what I wanted to do, make a difference, and not be some random figurehead occupying space. This fueled my passion, making me not just any random student walking through the hallways of the school. I was the one who was always involved in every activity, from leading the debate team to organizing charity events. My peers looked up to me in a way, and my teachers commended my dedication and leadership skills. That's why the idea of becoming the student body president had always lingered in the back of my mind. I guess it was just an expectation for most people that I would run for student body president. This is why what happened during the election period threw me into shock such that any time my opponent's name was mentioned, I found myself suddenly thrown into some sort of unease. Jake. The problem I had with Jake was that I knew him better than most people did. He had a track record with me for being cunning, manipulative, and divisive. He was the kind of person who always had a trick up their sleeve, an ulterior motive that was not so clear in the beginning. Sometimes, if you didn't pay much attention, you would never see between the lines of his BS, so many didn't see through his deceptive ways, but I did. I was familiar with him, and I could be certain that his ambition was nothing more than a decoy for the real reason he had in mind for campaigning. However, I didn't know all of this till the election was announced. As I sat in my first period class, the familiar sound of the intercom crackled to life, announcing the news that would set the wheels of change in motion. The upcoming student body election. My heart raced with excitement at the thought of finally having the chance to make a difference in our school community. I mean, it was what I'd always dreamed about, and I was ready to make changes to issues that I'd witnessed firsthand that plagued our school. But I guess I was oblivious to the fact that I wasn't the only one who was interested in becoming the student body president. While I confirmed within my mind to run for the position as I sat in my first period that day, so did Jake. I didn't get to know about his candidacy until later that week. As the news of my candidacy spread throughout the school without even coming up to categorically declare my interest yet, so did the news of Jake's candidacy. Across the hallway, between students gathered in twos and threes, Jake's name started to pop up. As the school got buzzed up with anticipation for the upcoming election, I finally got to launch my campaign. With a clear vision, I embarked on this journey with sincerity and determination. My campaign platform focused on two key pillars: improving school facilities and promoting inclusivity. I got the posters and the lapel pin for those who were on board with my campaign promises. From the rallying cries in the cafeteria to impassioned speeches in the courtyard, I made it my mission to connect with each and every one of my peers. My mission was to make them see that I listened by listening to their concerns and sharing my vision for a brighter future for our school. But there was Jake to contend with. While I focused on uplifting my fellow students and building a platform rooted in positivity, Jake took a different approach. His campaign strategy seemed to revolve around unnecessary tactics and underhanded maneuvers. It started with whispers in the hallways and escalated to full-blown rumors circulating on social media, across student pages and private group chats. It was just like Jake. It was his MO. So I wasn't really shocked by the occurrence. One particularly silly rumor started a couple of days before the final voting period. It stemmed from a twisted version of an experience we had in a middle school group project. Jake spun the story to make it seem as though I had single-handedly sabotaged the project and let my classmates down. It was a blatant distortion of the truth, but it struck a nerve nonetheless. Back in middle school, Jake and I and three other students were paired up for a group project on environmental conservation. I was not prepared to fail, so I took charge and divided tasks among our team, including Jake. But as the project progressed, it became clear that Jake wasn't pulling his weight. While I worked tirelessly to research and prepare our presentation, Jake seemed more interested in goofing off than contributing. When it came time to present our project to the class, I stepped up and delivered a thorough and well-researched presentation, while Jake barely said a word. His lack of effort was glaringly obvious to everyone in the room. However, instead of owning up to his shortcomings, Jake decided to twist the narrative to suit his own agenda. It was this very narrative he tried to push once again. He painted himself as the victim, relating it to his claim that my leadership was overbearing and unfair as far back as middle school and would be worse as the student body president. To be honest, it was a bit disturbing to be portrayed in that manner, yet I was bent on sticking true to the plan I had. Jake's underhanded moves were not enough to derail me from the path I had chosen to walk, or so I thought. As the final votes were tallied, a sense of anticipation hung heavy in the air, since the election campaign was more tense and tedious than the school had recorded in a while. But when the results were announced, my heart sank like a stone in my chest. I had lost the student body election by a razor-thin margin, falling just short of Jake's vote count. I watched Jake celebrate his victory with a smug grin, and I couldn't help but feel a surge of resentment rising within me. It wasn't fair. I had worked tirelessly, pouring my heart and soul into my campaign, only to come up short in the end. According to the rules of the election, the runner-up was automatically designated as the vice president, a role I never imagined myself in. At that moment, I had no choice but to embrace it, to put on a brave face and carry on. It was to show that I wasn't as crazy as Jake painted me, and that I didn't have an overbearing desire to lead. It felt like a punch to the gut, like being slammed by the door hard. What stung the most was not just losing the election, but the manner in which it happened. To see Jake, with his deceitful tactics and underhanded maneuvers, claim victory, while I was left to pick up the pieces, it felt like a slap in the face. As the days passed, my resentment towards Jake simmered, but I refused to accept defeat lying down. I knew for a fact that it was only a matter of time before Jake fumbled really badly in public space. I could decide to wait till it happens naturally, or I could propel it to happen faster. I decided the latter was a faster means of getting me the position I should have gotten without Jake's crazy story. Days passed and Jake settled into his role as student body president. His behavior became increasingly intolerable. It was like watching a balloon inflate, except instead of air, it was his ego that was swelling to astronomical proportions. With each passing day, he seemed to revel more and more in his newfound power, strutting around the school like he owned the place. What irked me the most was his blatant disregard for the opinions and concerns of his peers. It was as if he had decided that he alone knew what was best for the student body, and everyone else could just fall in line behind him. No matter how many times we tried to voice our ideas or raise legitimate concerns, Jake would just brush us off with a wave of his hand, dismissing our input without a single second thought. It was infuriating to watch him act so arrogantly, especially knowing that he had only won the election through underhanded tactics and deceit. But as much as his behavior grated on my nerves, I knew that stooping to his level would only make matters worse. So instead, I made a conscious decision to take a step back and let him dig his own grave. With each passing day, Jake's facade of competence began to crack, revealing the truth of his incompetence beneath. His shortcomings as a leader became more apparent, his lack of action on important issues glaringly obvious to both the school administration and the student body. It was kind of hilarious to see him babble out words when he was asked to present the proposal for the fundraiser event at the PTA. It became increasingly clear that Jake was not cut out for the role of student body president, and that was not a risk the school management was ready to take. They questioned the members of the student body, and everyone aired their views, stating that Jake was more of a joke, never available for meetings or calm to listen to the issues and feedback that members of the council had. They left with no choice but to remove Jake from his position as president. His inability to effectively lead had become a liability that almost caused them to lose face at the fundraiser. Thankfully, I and the other members had brainstormed ideas for the fundraiser, and we were able to slip it to the principal while our so-called president was up on stage embarrassing himself. As I watched him pack up his things and leave the student council room for the last time after the school management made their decision, I couldn't help but feel a sense of relief. He was gone, and I didn't have to move a muscle. Not directly, at least. With Jake out of the picture, the school administration wasted no time in taking action. Recognizing the need for strong and capable leadership in the wake of Jake's departure, they announced plans for a by-election to select a new student body president. For me, the news of the by-election was a welcome development. The decision was made in-house. The vote was cast in the student council room, with the principal overseeing the activity. In less than 20 minutes, a unanimous decision was made, and I was pushed from being stuck as Jake's subordinate to being the president of the student body. It was one sweet comeback, and I'm pretty sure the tale still resounds within the hallway of the school years after we graduated. So, not gonna lie, I felt like all of these titles back in my school days were just kind of titles. I just don't remember anybody in any kind of student body or student council thing actually doing much of anything. Like, yeah, maybe they just had to represent at a fundraiser or something. Or maybe they had the power to plaster posters advertising some senior event or something. But really, I thought most times it was really kind of a nothing burger. And just surely, there is no way that once you're removed a good few years from high school or whatever, that anybody is going to care enough or remember enough to quote this student body election. I think it's a pipe dream to think that there's some lasting legacy in some high school student body election. Like, especially if you're graduated and done with high school and you're still that obsessed with this story. It's almost like a, you need to learn to move on, I'm sure Jake has. But with that being said, that's all the time we have for today. Now, if you want to hear another absolutely crazy revenge story, check out that video on the left. Or if you missed my latest video, check out that video on the right. That said, I'll see you all next time with some more stories.